92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. I hope we can make your Saturday even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. We've got a lot to talk about today and a lot to talk about over the next few weeks. There's a lot going on right now. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
I'm pretty excited, We're a matter of hours out from WrestleMania 40.
Am I talking
to? It's going to be a big weekend.
Am I talking to Jeremy Branch or am I talking to Ric Flair?
I am channeling my inner Ric Flair because this is going to be a big one. We are about 2 hours out. If you're listening to this show live on Saturday, if you're checking it out on Spotify, it took place Saturday and Sunday. Got big cards coming up on both nights of WrestleMania 40. And Julio, I've been trying to talk you into, if nothing else, checking out WrestleMania 40 because The Rock has come back into the fold, and it has been so entertaining over the last couple of weeks.
So when did WrestleMania become a two-day event?
I started watching wrestling at Royal Rumble last year. And it was a two-day event then. Prior to that, I couldn't really tell you. I think 38 was the same way because Stone Cold Steve Austin came back and fought Kevin Owens on one night. But I'm a relatively new convert, and I think that I started watching right as there was this kind of cultural shift back towards wrestling being cool again.
So WrestleMania 40, does that mean they've been doing WrestleMania for 40 years?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
So it is an annual thing.
It is. And I think the first big one was, go ahead.
I do remember the first one, which, maybe I'm dating myself a little bit here, but I guess I thought I was a little older than I was at the time, not younger. Because that would put me at, pretty darn young, but like that was Hulk Hogan and Mr. T teaming up against, if I remember correctly, Rowdy Roddy Piper and Andre the Giant.
You may be right about that. Was that the MTV one with Cyndi Lauper?
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper was kind of my gateway into the WWF at the time. But like there was that whole like rock and wrestling connection that Cyndi Lauper was kind of the conduit for that, with all the wrestlers appearing in all her music videos and stuff like that. And then you had
Goonies Are Good Enough had all the big wrestlers of the time in it.
And then you had, of course they made that wrestlers album at the time with like all the wrestlers covering Land of a Thousand Dancers and Hulk Hogan's I Am a Real American, which he didn't even sing on. He just supposedly played guitar on, but I don't think he even really did that.
Probably
not. Yeah, you had all of that stuff. The Junkyard Dog doing Grab Them Cakes.
I haven't heard that one, but I do want to say to the wrestling fans that are listening to this right now, I'm not super well versed on the history of WrestleMania, but I do believe it was WrestleMania 3 when they teamed up with MTV, and I also think that was like the first time that wrestling was kind of seen as cool outside of the very niche audience that it had. I mean, if it had you watching it, it must have brought broader attention to it.
Well, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that first one was the top of the card was Hulk Hogan and Mr. T teaming up against, Mr. T, not a wrestler, but for some reason was doing this anyway. And against Rowdy Roddy Piper and Andre the Giant. And then of course, we had the Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling cartoon show. That was that was on in the 80s. Also, yeah, they had a Saturday morning cartoon show. That was that's what it was called. It was called Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, and had all the wrestlers as animated characters. Most of whom I don't think were doing their own voices. I think it was voice actors playing them.
I got to go back and watch some of this. I think it's just such an interesting subculture where, like, people that love it, they love it. They know every single thing about it. Outsiders, I think, look at it and are like, oh, that is probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard or seen in my life. And I kind of watch it through this weird, like, fence rider segment of the fandom where, like, I know it's dumb, but at the same time, you can't knock these people's, like, they're so charismatic. They can go out there and move a crowd of 60 and 80,000 people. They're, like, peak physical condition. Mm-hmm. They know how to do all of these stunts and acrobatics. Like, it's multifaceted, and,
well, something
and it's a
can
lot
be
of fun. Like,
something can be dumb and still be fun.
Yes. Yeah. And I think this is the epitome of that. So I think after the Rock and Wrestling thing, we got into, like, the Attitude Era.
Right.
Which I might have watched, like, 1 or 2 years of. Was that something that you were, at least tangentially aware of?
I mean, yeah, I was definitely aware of it. You know, like, you're talking about the whole time period where, like, a bunch of people broke off from the WWF and went to, the NWO was the group. What was the other league that
so
was...
So Eric Bischoff was running WCW.
Yeah, that's it. WCW. Which, I mean, I guess we kind of have that going on now, too, with AEW kind of being a presence, although not quite the same as you know, I don't think it's gotten as big as WCW was at the time, because WCW pulled off some of... the WWF's top stars, including Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
As he was known at the time, Hollywood Hogan.
Because the
WWE owned the Hulk Hogan name. That's one of the things, too. You see some of these wrestlers, if they change leagues, sometimes they change their name. Sometimes it's because the other league owns the name. It was the same thing with the wrestler who's now known as Ruby Soho in the AEW. She was Ruby Rotten when she was in the WWE. And they own that name, so she changed it to Ruby Soho, which is what she really wanted to use anyway. So,
and under the good graces of the band Rancid, for those of you that remember that single, but
it's
really cool.
Not only that, but like they did at least one show where like Rancid came on and played the song live to play her on.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
She was really you could tell she was really excited about it when she came out and everything. She's, of course, I've gotten to meet her. She did PensaCon a few years ago, and she's a very, very nice person. So, I mean, I don't know if that fits with...
That's when I met Ric Flair, at PensaCon several years ago. So, like, it definitely has earned its little spot in pop culture, and if I'm not mistaken, Mike Inslee's, like, a big fan of AEW.
Yeah, well, I think Mike Inslee's a fan all around, if I'm not mistaken. I won't put words in his mouth, but... But he's a wrestling guy, so I'm sure he'll be watching WrestleMania. I don't know if I'll be watching WrestleMania, but I did see some promos for it at the gym. I was walking at the gym the other day on the treadmill, and the TV in front of me happened to be turned on to Sci-Fi or Syfy or whatever the hell they call it now. It's SYFY. It used to be the Sci-Fi channel. It used to be just spelled Sci-Fi, but then they changed it to Syfy, and I guess it's so they can play Fast and the Furious movies. I definitely saw, that was the other thing I saw a bunch of commercials for, is like, hey, we've got this big weekend coming up where we're going to show 3 John Wick movies and 3 Blade movies and 5 Fast and the Furious movies. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, one of those is sci-fi, kind of, you know, so that's cool. And I mean, I guess there's some sci-fi elements in Fast and the Furious, especially the later movies. And you could probably say there's some in John Wick too, you know, the suits that are bulletproof and the things like that. But we're stretching the definition of sci-fi, but that was supposedly why they changed the name. But anyway, they were showing a lot of WrestleMania promos during that. What was on happened to be the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. And man, you know, I knew it wasn't good. I saw it when it came out originally theatrically, but man, it's not good.
It's just not good.
And I say that as a huge fan of the series, but yeah. So we'll see. We got to take a break, though. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, if I was going to do it like the show, I should have just cut the sound right before she said the word.
Good call.
That's the whole gimmick. We're talking about, of course, the show Invincible on Amazon Prime, which just wrapped up its second season. But that's a whole thing. Like every episode, there's somebody says something that leads up to them about looking like they're about to say the word Invincible, and instead it just cuts to the title card of Invincible. And the card continues to crumble through the season until we get to, as we did this week, the final episode of the season, and then the card crumbles the rest of the way away, and you have just the logo there. We just wrapped up. They broke this season up into two halves. You know, we had the first four episodes late last year, and then the second four episodes have been over the past 4 weeks. So before we get into anything about that, how do you feel about the way they broke up this season, Jeremy?
It feels so arbitrary to me and kind of on brand with Invincible, because in addition to doing that thing where they cut to the title card when they are going to say the word Invincible, like they'll cut to credits and then come back to the show. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of arbitrary breaking things up that don't really add or detract from me, and where they decide to do that just is kind of like, okay, whatever. Now, that said, halfway through the season, sure, it makes sense to put a break halfway through, but I don't think it added or took away anything from the season, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point that every episode has a post-credit scene, but it comes up like right away. It's really a mid-credit scene. But that always adds something next level to that episode.
So it sounds like you think it's less arbitrary than me where they split that up.
Well, I mean, as far as that part goes, as far as where they split the season, I understand why they did it. I understand that it had been a long time since season one already, and they wanted to get something out there so that the show, you know, people didn't just forget the show.
Sure.
But I feel like this would have played better 8 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I above and beyond that, the thing is, I think that where they cut it wasn't necessarily the best choice. Like, I think if the cliffhanger had been at the end of episode five, which I think had a huge cliffhanger ending to it, and then we had to wait a few months, that there would have been, oh my God, Invincible for, you know, 3 months. And then, but then you're only coming back to three episodes.
Yeah.
And that only works if you're Stranger Things and the episodes are going to be 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, that's a good point. Even though the finale of this season was an hour long, which was a nice little bonus bit of content.
Was it? I didn't realize it was that long. Like, it didn't feel that long to me.
It didn't, no.
Which is a good sign. I mean, this show is just doing great work all around. It is so well written. They're doing such a good job of adapting the comics, but changing things where they feel like they need to for dramatic purposes, or to just, in general, in some places, honestly, improve on the original comics. You know, there's some things that they've done that have moved some events up or changed the order of some events or just outright changed a couple of things that have really, really worked. And I couldn't be more pleased with the show overall. I can quibble about, you know, the whole cutting the season in half, et cetera, but, you know, when you go back and watch this later, you're not going to watch it that way, and you're going to forget that there was that gap there. And in terms of the overall storytelling, I think the show is just firing on all cylinders. It's so smart, and it's so well done, and the animation is so good, and it can be heavy at times, but it still has the moments of lightness, and it has characters that you really care about and that really grow and develop in a way that we haven't seen a whole lot in animation in particular.
Yeah, I am okay with violence. And in fact, I think that's probably one of the big draws of Invincible. But I do find it's in other moments where, like, I enjoy it a little bit more because, like, every fight is so brutal and it's so epic in scale, and there's, like, what would seem to be casualties over and over in the show, to where it kind of becomes a guessing game as to, like, okay, well, by all accounts, this character is dead, and then they're not dead. So then when characters do get killed, I don't know if I should be as invested in it or not, because I don't have the frame of reference that you do. I was never actually familiar with the comic books or the storyline. I have no idea where it's going. But I got, it's not, to me, it's not the page turner of the best TV shows, but it's also still really good for what it is. Like, I'm leaning towards like a 3 out of 5 situation. But I think you're probably a little more enthusiastic about it than I am.
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I haven't read like every single issue of the comic either, but like, this is making me want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm probably going to go back and read some of it that I haven't read yet. And I've kind of been doing a little bit of here and there research here and there as to some stuff that's coming down the line, because I don't feel like spoilers really kind of matter as much on something like this that's so closely based on the source material.
What's a big change that at the end of season 2 isn't such a big spoiler that it will mess things up for viewers, but like something that I would think was a pretty interesting or significant change from the source material?
I mean, well, one thing is... Yeah, and we will go ahead and put up a spoiler warning for anybody that hasn't seen the show yet, because I don't want to spoil too much, and this is going to get into the last couple of episodes of the season by saying this. So spoiler warning if you haven't seen the last couple of episodes of Invincible. But in the comics, basically, Mark and Amber break up, which happens in the next to last episode of this season, and... Eve's immediately like, so I hear you're single now. Are we dating now or what? And that's not only not what happens here, and we do have this situation where Mark becomes aware of Eve's feelings for him, but they specifically pulled away a little bit from that.
And that's a good change.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see if it's a good thing. I do think that Mark and Eve are going to get together at some point, and I'm here for that.
I really like Amber's kind of dramatic monologue in that episode where her and Mark do decide to part ways. There was some really kind of character exploration that isn't done often in comics, mm-hmm. and kind of the idea about her losing agency I thought was really smart. So when you say there are smart aspects to the show, that was one that immediately when I watched it, I was like, oh, they're kind of pulling back the curtain on the way female characters are often treated in superhero media.
Well, and it's the whole thing, too, of them realizing that even though they love each other, that's not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think it's a matter of Mark and Amber not caring very deeply for each other, but they live in different worlds.
So when you and I talked last time, you were like, there's something in the final episode that we got to talk about. Like, what was the big pivotal moment for you in this season that you were just like, oh, that is awesome?
Well, I mean, you talked a little bit, and I didn't quite get back around to it, but the violence in the show, I don't think I've ever seen an animated show where I've recoiled at the violence on screen, not because the violence was extreme, because it is, but more of what that violence meant to that character.
I can see that. Yeah.
And we see it with Mark killing Angstrom Levy in the final episode of this season, and the PTSD he has after that, because that, they never say it, but that's what it is.
So to your point about, and something we were talking about, where the episodes are broken up, wouldn't a great dramatic cliffhanger would have been he is stranded in this post-apocalyptic place, and then we cut to the other storylines going on with Omni-Man and Alan in particular, and that's just where the season ended, because it felt like it resolved itself just so fast that it was like there was very little doubt as to what Mark's fate was going to be.
Oh, I don't think that situation is remotely resolved yet. Like, I get that, like, the immediate I'm stranded situation is resolved, but the after effects of what's happened here, I don't think we're anywhere near a resolution on that.
Yeah, for sure.
So I have no problem with that, because that's the point. Isn't Mark is stranded on a post-apocalyptic world? The point is, Mark is stranded with the feelings that he has after having.
And I think that that would have reinforced that theme by leaving him there. Because I agree with you, and I'm sorry for kind of railroading you there. Mm-hmm. I think, if I may, that what you were saying kind of is, after he killed Engstrom, he's going to have to deal with the emotional fallout of what it actually means to take somebody's life, especially because Engstrom was kind of saying, like, you're the villain, you're the bad guy, and then he succumbs to this hatred or this anger. And I thought that the setting of that reinforced the theme as opposed to being like secondary to it.
I think, well, one, we don't know how long Mark was there before the Guardian showed up and rescued him, but
sure,
you know, and we do know that in terms of their planet, it was like 20 years.
Yeah.
In terms of their dimension. So, you know, he may have been there for a little while, but I think that that approach might work in a novel or even a graphic novel where you can get into the character's thoughts and things like that. I don't think it works so much in something like this. He needs somebody to play against.
Yeah. Yeah. I get what you mean.
So yeah, I don't think it was the wrong choice, but I think that what happened there and where he is at this point is he's so alienated and he needs some people to pull him back from the ledge. And his mom is kind of trying to do it, but his mom is kind of pushed to the limits too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see where it develops from here. I just think overall the series is so good. You really come to care about these characters in a way that, again, you don't see that often in animation, especially superhero animation. And
who is this Negan character that we're compared to Negan that we're getting introduced to in I think episode 7?
Well, you know, again, the comparisons are apt because this is all Robert Kirkman, same creator.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. Jeremy, I don't know if Rod Serling had Hollow Earth in mind.
Well, he should have. No, I don't know.
should he?
I don't know, man. Okay, so what are we talking about?
I don't even know if Golden Earring had Hollow Earth in mind when they came up with that song there in, what was that, 1982, I want to say. But yeah, we're talking about the latest film in Legendary's Monsterverse, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Everything's an empire right now. We got Frozen Empire. We got The New Empire. I don't know what's going on there, but
I would assume that you and I are on the other side of the fence in terms of these recent Empire movies. After talking to you last week and just kind of getting your general vibe this week, I'm really curious to hear what you thought about this terribly titled movie.
it's a thing that happened. That's
Julio,
for sure.
Just have fun. You can criticize it, but wasn't it just a good time?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's it's a gorgeous movie to look at. Yeah,
sure.
Watching the they did, and they don't spend a whole lot of time wasting time with the humans that you don't care about.
This is a Kong movie. It's the first time he's ever just been the protagonist of a movie, and it's really kind of interesting through that lens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Kong is definitely the hero of this movie, and you know, Godzilla to a little bit lesser extent, but Kong's your dude in this movie. He's your POV character in this movie. And I mean, that's in the end what the new empire is him gaining a new empire where he's, you know, the king, so to speak, over,
watching him body those other apes down in the hollow earth was just so fun. And like the way he's laying traps, I guess we're getting into spoilers as if it matters, but yeah, I think we're probably on the same page, but I feel a little bit more like, I just rolled with it. I thought it was fun. I also feel like the worst thing that could have happened to this movie was Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even compare these two things. They're not even trying to be the same thing. Like, you know, Godzilla Minus One is just in its own category over here, you know, and this is just, hey, here's... I mean, in some ways, it goes back to like the golden age of Godzilla movies, and that is just, you know, here's a bunch of monsters. They're going to fight. There's your movie.
Yeah, it's definitely got Showa era vibes.
Yeah. You know, and in that regard, you know, it looks beautiful. You can follow the action, which is not true of a lot of these movies. So I appreciated that about it. When Mothra shows up, Mothra is just freaking gorgeous.
I had such a huge grin on my stupid face as that stupid, like, the screenplay of this movie is so nonsensical.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
At one point, Kong gets frostbite in his hand, and Dan Stevens' character's like, oh, I got the perfect solution for it. It's like 100 yards away, and it's this giant Infinity Gauntlet hand that's actually got the perfect antiseptic or antidote to frostbite in it, and we're just going to, like, put it on his arm because it was just here and it's going to work out so perfectly.
And not only that, it's going to give him a power up.
Yeah.
It's going to make him stronger.
The movie is just full of that kind of stuff where like Godzilla's just kind of cruising through the water and like, oh, he's got to go get this basically a buff. Like he's good. Like you said, a power up where he's just going to kill like one of these most powerful kaiju and take its pinkness. And then that's going to make him stronger. It's just like, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I was along for the ride. I feel like as far as MonsterVerse movies go, this is pretty on par with the rest of them, with the exception of 2014, which I'm still kind of putting up on a pedestal. But what did you think about it, like, in comparison to the others and then in comparison to the most recent Netflix series, Monarch?
Apple TV Plus, yeah. That's part of my problem with it. We're supposed to believe that this is a cohesive universe.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing in here that, I mean, other than carrying over a couple of characters from Godzilla versus Kong and the fact that the organization Monarch exists, there's nothing here that carries over from anything else, including the series. And it's like the series
Could have been the first one and it would have been fine.
The series left things in an interesting place that I wanted to see what was next.
Nope.
And like those characters don't even exist. Like just pretend that this is not even the same world because they don't even exist in this movie. They're not even mentioned. There's nothing that goes back to anything. There's a brief mention of Skull Island. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's
we kind of got to give it to them, though, for not doing the Marvel thing where, like, if you don't watch the series, it doesn't affect your viewing experience. Excuse me. If you don't watch the series, it doesn't affect your viewing of the movies. Or is it a net negative no matter how you slice it?
I think if you go into this expecting a continued story from the previous films, that you would be just as... just as lost as you would if you were coming into this as the first movie you were seeing in the series.
I agree.
Like if you're like, all right, so what happened to Kyle Chandler and Millie Bobby Brown?
Who cares?
Yeah, well, and in some ways I agree, who cares? But in some ways it's like, well, they were supposed to be key characters to this saga and you know, they're just not even a mention. Not even a like, oh yeah, they had to go over there off screen somewhere. Like, you know, it's nothing. There's so many like plot threads out there in this world that this movie just ignores. And maybe it should. Maybe that's, I mean, it's certainly making the money that shows that maybe I'm wrong and maybe that's not what people want. But
yeah, people are dumb, though, aren't they? I'm sorry, listeners. Y'all are smart. You listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 every Saturday at 4 p.m. But everybody else, all the other people are dumb. Because I feel like we've learned a really bad lesson about these MonsterVerse movies from listening specifically to the fans who are like, who cares about the human characters? We just want to see monsters fighting. And, like, that's got its own charm and its own appeal, but it does leave people like me and you feeling like it's lacking any real substance, you know?
Oh, it's totally insubstantial. But that said, it's pretty. I do think that it suffers a little bit from a couple of things. One is that I don't think the scale of the characters is consistent in terms of the physical size. There's a little bit of explanation for that built into the story with Godzilla supposedly getting 20% bigger when he absorbs all this energy.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, there's this like baby great ape character in this movie that's, you know, set up to be Kong's, you know, son, for lack of a better term.
Protégé?
He's not actually his son, but you know, and this character seems, you know, in scale to the other characters when they're in Hollow Earth. But when he's up on the surface, all of a sudden he seems like way out of proportion. He just suddenly seems like he's much bigger than he seemed like he was in Hollow Earth.
Interesting. I did not pick up on that, but the scaling thing has always been a little bit wonky. But Godzilla was so big in some shots in 2014, and I think they corrected a lot of that in GVK, which was the last one. But they might have just gone back to saying, like, who cares? Whatever looks cool in the shot. So I'll have to look at that when I rewatch.
The other thing that I have an issue with is some of the music. The score I really like. The score is really good.
Cool.
That's one of the things I really enjoyed in this movie. But there are just some really egregious needle drops in this one. I mean, and the Golden Earring song that we played at the start here was one of them, and that's probably the best one. It kind of works because it's when they're making the first journey into Hollow Earth in the movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of fits. But then there's just like, all right, well, we're going to steer into this like cheesy late 70s, early 80s album-oriented rock kind of needle drops for the rest of the movie. And like, they say nothing about what's going on in the movie. They're just there.
I blame James Gunn for this.
Well, that's what they were going for, but Gunn is good at it. If you want to do this, you want to really study what James Gunn does or what Edgar Wright does. And man, I just watched Shaun of the Dead again, and the way movie uses music, chef's kiss, man. It's incredible. Those guys are just the masters of this kind of thing. Tarantino, Scorsese, they are the masters of this kind of thing. It's not as easy to do as it looks. And this movie shows how badly it goes when you don't think about it and when you don't actually have the songs having something to say about what's going on screen, and you're just like, this doesn't sound cool.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. And I echo what you said. The score is awesome. It's a lot of that, like, evocative of the 80s synth soundtracks. You know, it's got some crossover with Ragnarok, I think, in more ways than that, aesthetically as well. And I kind of enjoyed the imagery, like you said. Cool movie to look at.
Yeah. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
We'll be right back.
is Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julia Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we got a little bit of movie news we want to get to here in the last little bits of the show here. And since we're going to start off talking about a famous surfer, I felt like it made sense to play one of the most famous surf rock songs of all time, Miserlou by the late, great Dick Dale, who, I think a lot of people probably associate that song with Pulp Fiction now because, of course, it was the opening credit song in Pulp Fiction. But this song goes back way, way before that. And this is, you know, legendary surf guitarist, which I think makes sense because we're going to talk about a legendary surfer here. That being, of course, the Silver Surfer.
Heard of him.
Yeah.
Heard of him.
You've heard of him? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
You sure that's the pronoun you want to use here?
That's the one I've heard of. It's got to be the only one that exists.
Well, you may be in for a surprise because we have had some casting news on the Fantastic Four movie that's set to come out in a couple years now. We already had the news of the Fantastic Four casting. We've got, of course, Pedro Pascal playing Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. Vanessa Kirby playing Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman.
Great casting.
We've got Eben, what is his? You're going to get his name right because I won't. The guy from The Bear.
Moss.
Yes.
Evan Moss Bachrann
from The Bear playing Ben Grimm, the Thing. And then we've got Eddie Munson himself, Joseph, why is this name just flying out of my head too? Joseph Quinn.
That one I don't know. Okay.
Joseph Quinn playing Johnny Storm.
This is amazing casting for the Fantastic Four. There's no way they could mess this up.
So, okay. I agree with you so far. And I still don't think they've messed things up, but some other people may feel differently. We have an announcement of the casting of the Silver Surfer for the Fantastic Four movie. So that leads us to believe that this movie is going to involve Galactus, who is one of the heavyweights of the Marvel Universe. So character that we haven't seen done right on screen yet. Looking forward to seeing that. Silver Surfer is the herald of Galactus. So Silver Surfer being played by Julia Garner.
Who is
perhaps best known for winning multiple Emmy Awards for her role on Ozark. Been in a bunch of other stuff as well, but a very, you know, very celebrated actress. But that's the thing we're going to run into first here is that most people may know the Silver Surfer character as having been male in the comics.
I don't care if the Silver Surfer is male or female. I just know that my Silver Surfer is silver, and the fact that Julia Garner is not is very problematic to me, Julio.
Are you saying that they've whitewashed the Silver Surfer?
They whitewashed the Silver Surfer, man. What happened? No, I think Julia Garner is awesome. I love Ozark. She's easily the best character in that series. I only wanted the best for her character as that series came to an end. And while I'm not familiar with this version of the character, the idea that we're supposed to be comic book accurate is just ludicrous. Have the movies taught us nothing at this point? Like, none of them are comic book accurate. And even to what you said about Invincible earlier, when we're looking at changes in the adaptation, more times than not, a substantial amount of times, it's for the better that we change the stuff. So what do you think about this?
I think that there's nothing intrinsic in the original story that changes with the Surfer's gender changing. The way they're what they're going to do is they've announced that she's not playing a version of Norrin Rad, which is the character who becomes the Silver Surfer in the comics.
Great name for a surfer character, by the way, Norrin Rad.
Yeah,
I didn't even know that.
She is playing a version of Shalabal. Now the whole story is originally, the Galactus comes to eat their planet Zenla, and Norrin Rad sacrifices himself to save his world and his love Shalabal by offering his services as Galactus's herald in exchange for sparing the planet.
What a legend!
There's nothing about that story that changes if it's Shalabal making the sacrifice instead of Norrin. And that's
the name is kind of a downgrade. Other than that, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what we're getting. They have said she is playing a Shalabal version of the Silver Surfer. There are alternate universes within the Marvel Comics universe where that's what happened.
Okay.
The other fun thing that's kind of coming out about this is there's some question marks over whether this movie is taking place in the mainline Marvel Cinematic Universe or not. Because there are some inklings that this movie is a period piece and it's set in the 60s. There are some inklings in the key art that we've seen so far. There's some inklings in the way the buildings are designed and that everything looks very Art Deco. This may not be the mainline Marvel universe. And considering we've got this whole multiversal thing going on and that we're leading up to Secret Wars, I don't necessarily think that's the wrong way to introduce the Fantastic Four.
Is there a world, and this is just kind of me spitballing here, is there a world where the Fantastic Four's mutations, transformations happen as a byproduct of them crossing through some sort of dimensional barrier to come to our universe?
There is, but we don't talk about that.
Oh, I apologize. We'll scratch that from the record.
Yeah, because I'd like to just strike the entire Josh Trank movie from the record, so...
Oh, yeah.
Because that is how they got their powers in the Josh Trank movie.
I see.
It was through dimensional travel.
I really didn't know that.
No, you didn't? I thought you were making reference to that.
No, but it would have been a banger. Okay, so scratch that from the record. Totally intended. Totally meant to make that connection.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, obviously remains to be seen what's going to be done with this. I have no intrinsic problem with having a female Silver Surfer. I think this is a great actress. I think she could pull off the role. But you say who cares, but there's going to be people who care. I've seen it already.
It's all decided by the algorithm so that tribalists can choose sides and the progressives can galvanize and go see this movie in droves to prove the haters wrong. And Disney does it every time, dude. It is all determined by an algorithm at this point.
Well, the haters are going to go see it just so they can hate on it, too.
Yeah, you're right. That's a fact. They got to make YouTube content.
I just want to see a good movie. I don't think we've got a really strong Fantastic Four movie yet, and these are great characters that I think we could do so much for. I'm glad that we're not just diving into another Doctor Doom story. I want to see Doctor Doom done right. Doctor Doom is the character they've probably screwed up the most in every previous iteration of the Fantastic Four on screen. But I like the actress. I'm here to see what she's going to do with it. I like the cast. I like the director. Hopefully going to like the movie. We'll see. Another big movie franchise that we've gotten some news about here in the last couple of days is, to my surprise, I think I might have thought they were going to let this franchise lay low for a little while after the last film did okay. Didn't do well, didn't knock a whole lot of socks off, but you know, we had just a couple years ago the much heralded return of The Matrix with The Matrix, what was it called? Matrix Resurrected or
I think so or yeah, I think so.
Revisited or something like that. But yeah, we had we had Lana Wachowski come back with a new story. We had Keanu Reeves return and Carrie Ann Moss return, and we had a big movie, and it came out and it was the thing that happened. And I thought it was fine.
It was fine.
I liked it probably. I'm not one of the ones that hates on the other two Matrix sequels either. I don't love them, but I think they're fine. I think nothing's topped the original movie yet.
And never will.
But maybe, remains to be seen because we do have a new Matrix movie in the pipeline, much to my surprise. And the biggest surprise about this one, I think, is that neither of the Wachowski sisters are involved in this movie. Lana Wachowski is going to serve as an executive producer on it, but this is not a story coming from the Wachowskis. They're not writing it. They're not directing it. It's a hands-off approach, and we have a new filmmaker coming into this universe. And this is a filmmaker that excites me because it's a filmmaker I really like, Drew Goddard. Is going to write and direct this film. If you don't know who he is, he was Oscar nominated for writing The Martian. He co-wrote
directed
and directed
one of my favorites, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. He co-wrote and directed Cabin in the Woods. He wrote Cloverfield, the original Cloverfield movie. He's written for a lot of TV. He was the co-creator of the Daredevil Netflix series, which is something I think we're probably going to talk about next week because there's been some news about that as well. So this is a guy with quite a pedigree. He's a great writer, he's a great director, and I'm interested to see what he brings to this franchise.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any way. You can only really change the game in the way that The Matrix did once. But to your point, I enjoyed all of the sequels to varying degrees. So, like, I'm on board for another one.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that they're probably going to go in a completely different direction on this. Like, I don't see Keanu coming back.
No.
Maybe we see some side characters, but I feel like the way to go is just to move on from Neo. Kind of like the way to go in Star Wars, maybe to move on from the Skywalker saga, but we'll see how that goes.
That won't happen.
We're going to see Rey Skywalker, and I'm okay with that because that's still kind of a break. But we'll see where it goes. But I'm interested to see. This news is just coming out, so we got a lot of time before we'll actually see a movie. But we'll definitely be talking about it when we do. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.